looking at decarbonization across the board is a grand goal, and it is very achievable. And it, of course, there's a wide variety of technologies that will allow this goal to be achieved. Today, if you look at capital allocation towards initiatives that are driving future, you know, future growth and future technologies, you know, those consumers demand a carbon neutral lifestyle. Governments are driven by more than just social good. Governments are also driven by vote banks. Governments are also driven by, staying in power. So the key thing to understand here is, you know, the goal of businesses, most enterprises, is not to be profitable. Different kinds of plastic exist. Some plastics are treated as, you know, non-valuable. Others are treated as more valuable.
Hello and welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, and businesses that are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they don't stray from being leaders who are not just admired for the vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they're building an ecosystem of believers who consistently push the boundaries. They allow principles to take precedence over ad hocism. For them, profitability is as important as scale, creating and leading new categories and innovations. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes, failures, agonies and ecstasies, and of course, little joys in life. It is as much about their personal life stories as about their entrepreneurial journeys. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms. For this episode, I'm delighted to have Anand Sri Chaturvedi, Vice Chairman and CEO, Flex Films International. Anand Sri holds a graduate degree from Babson College with a triple major in finance, global strategic management, and economics. He learned the trade of flexible packaging both domestically and internationally with hands-on experience as a trainee and apprentice in India, Mexico, Poland, Egypt, the UAE, and the USA, and subsequently spearheaded the expansion of UFlex in the USA. He currently serves as Vice Chairman of Flex Films and heads the overseas business. Anand Sri brings with him a vast array of experience right from his first job at the age of 15 as an intern and assistant to the late U.S. Senator Edward M. Kennedy, followed by stints at DreamWorks, TJ Maxx, Accenture, Mubadala, and his own venture capital firm that he co-founded while at college. Anand Sri is additionally vested with the responsibility of global product stability, R&D, and HR protocols, and also dons the hat of Chief Cultural Officer at UFlex. Welcome to the show, Anand.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Anand, you know, about 2 years ago, on November 1, 2021, Prime Minister Narendra Modi announced that India will achieve the target of net zero emissions by 2070. What's your view on this?
So, Gaurji, first of all, thank you again for having me on the podcast. I really like the name of your podcast because, you know, the Unusual Suspects stems from the movie, The Usual Suspects, yeah. Right? And in correlation to that, my answer is, you know, very linked to what Prime Minister Modi's goal is. You know, 2070 is a very, very long, you know, time from now, right? I mean, we're talking 50 years out. So, you know, this is a very achievable goal mm-hmm. from that perspective. Mm. The only difference is that what are the basic foundations that will have to be built now, right? When you set out a goal for 2070, you know, absolutely that goal is achievable, right? But what we can't pay attention to what is going to happen, you know, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years out from now. We need to pay attention to what we do now. So the foundations of this, you know, this goal lies today. Now, net zero means, you know, complete decarbonization across the board. So plastics contributes about 19% on a global basis. I'm not sure what the contribution to India would be, but it would be significant. And then you have obviously the, you know, energy contributions of coal, gas, and, you know, other basically ecosystems that produce this energy to drive India today. Looking at decarbonization across the board is a grand goal, and it is very achievable. And it, of course, there's a wide variety of technologies that will allow this goal to be achieved. The key is the foundation, what we lay today for this, right? So, you know, how much clean tech do we absorb? How much of the plastic problem do we resolve?
That's right.
And the basis of that is going to make this goal either very achievable by 2070, or there will be a mad rush in the last, let's say, decade before this timeline comes on, where a lot of, you know, dramatic action will have to be taken.
Absolutely. And, you know, India faces a peculiar paradox, and it's a paradox of challenges. We have to sustain our growth momentum, but we also have to be on the right side of the climate change debate. How do we balance this?
To be honest with you, I don't actually see that as a paradox. You know, I don't see climate change and economic growth as mutually exclusive. You know, I feel like this is a theory that has been, you know, taunted. And I feel like, you know, from my perspective, which is sort of a unique combination of an Eastern perspective, but also a Western perspective, because I spend time, you know, in both economies, the paradox is not development versus climate change. The paradox is, you know, how do we transition from a point of deprivation to the developing nations, then transitioning towards insecurity of resources, right? So the challenge is actually quite a bit more complex than just, you know, climate change versus development. Climate change will have to be in line with development today, right? Today, if you look at capital allocation towards initiatives that are driving future, you know, future growth and future technologies, you know, those consumers demand a carbon neutral lifestyle. You know, they will demand a better balance with climate. You know, so this debate is really, I would say, you know, it's still very profound and it's very active, but it's evolving. The key thing is, you know, how do we go from not depriving people who are actually the least contributors to the climate change momentum that the world is seeing, while is managing the insecurity of the people who are actually the largest contributors towards climate change, and making sure that they don't feel, you know, that their resources are being taken away, while other resources are shared with people who are today deprived of them, you know. And that equation can be balanced. It's a matter of capital allocation. Where do you allocate the capital that drives that shift, that drives that change?
You know, the government has done its bit. I mean, the government is doing its bit, rather. But there's also a lot of responsibility that organizations, corporates, businesses, civil society organizations, and individuals will also have to bear. How do we go about achieving this? Because the government can, you know, set out policies, set out regulations, and set out laws. Eventually, on the ground, it has to be executed by rest of the stakeholders. How do we go about achieving this?
Absolutely. So the way to look at this question, Gaurav ji, is to look at what the government is doing and how businesses will respond to that. You know, the truth is businesses respond to their consumers, right? Businesses are, you know, very, very flexible, and will pivot to make sure that their product or service that they are producing today is sold. Tomorrow, when the consumer votes with their rupees, right? When they vote on what products and services they're willing to buy, as opposed to not willing to buy, these businesses will make that shift overnight, you know? Mm-hmm. The government forcing regulation is a good thing, and it is something that is required. But unfortunately, businesses will always try to resist that, because governments are driven by more than just social good. Governments are also driven by vote banks. Governments are also driven by, you know, staying in power. So the key thing to understand here is, you know, the goal of businesses, most enterprises, is not to be profitable, right? That's a secondary goal. Most of the time, you know, that will be put as a primary goal. But the primary goal of all businesses and all enterprises, in my view, and according to my economics teacher from, you know, 10th grade, is to survive,
yeah,
right? And once that survival is threatened, you know, these products, these services, this, you know, this alignment towards being carbon neutral, will, you know, will happen in a strategic meeting over a quarter. And those initiatives will be taken, right? The government is doing great things to make this happen. But in the end, it's the consumer that's going to drive this. And the minute consumers change their focus on what services they're willing to buy and what products they're willing to buy, these businesses will make that change almost overnight.
You know, in the final analysis, profit maximization and sustainability will have to be mutually complementary goals. Do you think that the days of gradualism are over and we now need to move to a Big Bang kind of an approach?
I feel like the Big Bang approach is misunderstood in this context, right? What most people forget is the Big Bang wasn't an explosion. It was an expansion, right? Gradualism is the Big Bang, right? The Big Bang is the foundation that has been laid by, you know, the government today, by the policies today, and by the way the consumers are responding to climate change today. Now we are in sort of the expansion phase. And now what we have to see as, you know, Earth's community, right? Since we're talking about the Big Bang, I'm not going to take a universal perspective in play. But the community of Earth has to figure out how fast and how vast this expansion of climate-friendly, you know, business, you know, policies, products and services combined with, you know, the right government initiatives happen. So we are, you know, I feel like, you know, gradualism is something that, you know, complements the Big Bang, but the Big Bang also is, you know, just an acceleration of this natural progression of resources coming into play in this context. I don't see it as mutually exclusive, and I don't see that a sudden actions or sudden dramatic changes will make really any impact. You know, this is an expansion. Now we have to set the pace of this expansion, you know, but this is inevitable.
So what is Uflex doing on this, Prophet?
Uflex has actually been involved in this, you know, for, I would say, the last, you know, 30 years. And why we do that, why I say that is, you know, we invented recycling technology, mechanical recycling technology in the 90s, again, primarily driven by our focus on surviving, you know. Even back then, us as a polymer company, as a polymer science company, we were basically told that, listen, you know, plastics does not have a very good future. Plastics is a negative thing for the environment. So for us, it was very important to find the solutions for us internally. And, you know, if you look at, you know, our portfolio today, not a single piece of plastic has not been recycled within the Uflex ecosystem in the last 30 years. Because for us, that's our product. And that's, you know, that's our capital also going out as waste, if we allow that to happen. For what the sad part was, you know, these technologies and these initiatives that really were created in the mid 90s, never really were able to expand to the general market up until the late 2018, you know, 19 time, you know, time zone. So, or circa, I should say. I've been selling recycled 100% PCR recycled films in the US, for example, for the last 12 years. And quite frankly, I didn't have really any customers for this product till 2016. So even, you know, the, you know, initiatives that we take, you know, need a place and a customer, for those technologies. So Uflex is doing, you know, a lot of different things with recycling, with, you know, with pyrolysis, with biodegradable enzymes. But these initiatives need to have a roadmap into the general masses. And that's what we're looking for today.
You know, rapid innovation in frontier technologies, in frontier products, such as plastics, can potentially help produce goods that are stronger, yet lighter and more efficient than their earlier generation. Tell me more about what Uflex is doing on this front.
So, you know, I want to address the question in two ways, Georgi. One is, you know, what does, you know, rapid expansion or you know, sort of rapid research mean, right? The truth is, you know, as I said earlier, right, this is a general expansion of what your portfolio is. So we have to take a look at what the solutions that exist today, right? And Uflex is very active in, you know, in incorporating all the solutions that exist for plastic and plastic recycling today. So that's mechanical recycling, that's chemical recycling, you know, that's converting plastic into energy. That's, you know, using biodegradable enzymes so that, you know, the plastic can biodegrade and really become compost or some version of it. And then we're also looking at, you know, various chemical recycling technologies and so forth, which we feel today are not carbon neutral. We feel like they produce excessive greenhouse emissions that they really should today, so that we don't see them as a solution. But we know the technology is evolving and developing, right? The key thing that UFlex does today is, you know, we need to incorporate the stock problem of plastic and the flow problems, you know. So, you know, plastics is, one is the stock, the legacy of plastic that already exists today. How do you solve that? How do you solve these giant, you know, basically piles of plastic waste that, you know, and are in landfills, that are in sewage systems, that are scattered across urban ecosystems all over the country, right? All over the world, really. And then how do you also solve the flow problem, which is the new plastic that's being produced today, that consumers are buying today, that factories are making today? And so, you know, the mechanical recycling, the pyrolysis, you know, those aspects of our technology try to attack the stock problem, you know, where you get rid of or, you know, put into the wealth aspect instead of the waste aspect of the stock of plastics. And then we also try to solve the flow problems. The new plastics that we create today should not become, you know, a part of that landfill, should be a part of the solution rather than a part of the problem. So, you know, the last part that I'll say in this question is the UN report recently talks about, you know, reusing plastic, recycling, and then reorienting and diversifying plastic, right? This reorienting and diversifying plastic is a very key aspect of solving the flow problem. And we're very happy to see that, you know, global bodies like the UN is starting to look at, you know, solving the plastic waste problem in a practical way and not looking for this magic pill or magic solution that so far has eluded us. Tomorrow, if this solution does get, you know, created, UFlex will be one of the first people to pivot towards it.
You know, recent research has shown substantial value creation potential in capturing plastic waste using existing technologies to process it to make new plastics and other chemicals. Help me understand this from a UFlex point of view.
So, you know, when we talk about recent technologies, I'll be very frank with you. I don't think these are recent technologies. These are technologies that have recently come to the forefront or have been highlighted, right? These technologies have existed for a long time. It's really what has changed recently is the public initiative, you know, it's the interest of consumers and it's the interest of, you know, the, not only this generation of consumers, but especially the next generation of consumers who are deeply and keenly aware of how the plastic problem will affect it, you know, them and their lifestyle and, you know, how it's going to make ecosystems that they enjoy today, like mountains and beaches and, you know, other places, far more unfriendly places than they need to be just because of this contamination that, you know, comes onto those surfaces. So, you know, India produces about, I would say, like 5.6 million tons of plastic, right? About half of those, you know, and upwards of one third of those are single use, right? The first thing that UFlex is doing is, you know, we ensure that there is, you know, almost no single use plastics in our portfolio, right? Everything is reusable. Everything is recyclable. Everything has a second life, a third life, you know, however way that's possible, right? So, you know, a plastic product that gets made in our ecosystem today, tomorrow can either become the same plastic product again and again and again with the least amount of energy consumed to reshape and reform that, or it becomes something else, you know, like plastic pack becomes a bench or a piece of a part that goes into a bicycle or, you know, so it has a second and a third life, right? And that's the key thing that UFlex wants to, you know, focus on is how do we, you know, get rid of this aspect of plastic waste and work, you know, our way of making it plastic wealth, because that's what we do inside in our own company, right? We're not wasting any of the raw materials that we're making, right? Or any of the products we're making, they go back and reorient in our system. UFlex wants to do that on a bigger scale.
You know, the worldwide crisis of plastics waste pollution is leading to calls for action from a wide range of stakeholders, from consumers to regulators to brand owners to plastic producers. And it represents a very complex challenge. What are the key challenges you foresee in India?
In India, I would say the key challenge to understand in India is how do you balance out, you know, making sure that you have things like food security, water security, and, you know, these key resources that are being, you know, that are ever in demand by a growing population, while it's also managing the waste that providing these resources, you know, will entail, right? The key challenge really is that India is in a point of its history where tremendous amount of wealth is being created in India across all, wage categories, right? Truth be told, you know, plastic waste and, you know, plastic recycling typically is, you know, a bigger challenge for, you know, the lower end of the segment of consumers. But, you know, if you look also even in the developed world, as consumers transition to a higher, you know, I would say wage status, their consumption of other materials like glass, metal, things like aluminium, things like paper bags and paper products goes up significantly more because, you know, that's the packaging material of choice of higher margin items, right? Mm. And lower margin items tend to be packed in plastic. The lowest margin items tend to be packed in, you know, very, very bad plastic, you know? So as India's wealth grows on a, you know, per capita GDP level, we will automatically start seeing a transition from, you know, the use of plastics today to now use of, you know, sort of different secondary materials, you know, and that's going to be the key, you know, focus for India sort of in the future is, you know, how do you provide development, not just for the, you know, top 1% or 0.5%, but transition that downwards. And then how that changes the materials that get used in that development. But it's one small part of the equation.
And what are the hurdles to effective waste management in India?
The biggest hurdle to effective waste management in India, truth be told, is, you know, how do you allocate capital towards waste management, right? India has larger needs for capital. You know, India needs infrastructure. As we talked about, you know, other kinds of food and water security. India needs, you know, resources on a much, much wider scale. So where does, you know, waste management fit into that? You know, the key thing is first you have to create a very, very good ecosystem for, you know, every member of your society, right? And once you are in that place where, you know, where there's a significant number of people in your society that are achieving a certain, quality of life, then that's when you typically waste management comes into play, right? What is that crucial point for India? And that, quite frankly, I haven't been able to identify yet. I feel like we're transitioning towards it, but I feel like waste management will be very, very different in different communities in India, you know? So communities that, you know, that definitely have different income levels, but along with different income levels, how they actually treat their resources, you know, and what kind of quality of life do they want?
And final question, how can you accelerate our transition to a circular economy, which is more time scale consistent with response to climate change, water scarcity, and other global challenges?
Allocate capital resources to those problems, right? The biggest issue when it comes to, let's say, plastic is, you know, plastic on a secondary and tertiary basis does not have any wealth to it, you know? Metals have a better recycling future from the wealth perspective. They're easier to sort, easier to pick up, and easier to bring back to a recycling facility, you know? Today, different kinds of plastic exist. Some plastics are treated as, you know, non-valuable. Others are treated as more valuable. You know, consumers need to understand how to create wealth out of these, you know, waste products that are coming out today, and then, you know, generate them back. That's the whole focus of a circular economy, right? Yeah. If you generate wealth on one end, then that, you know, then that goes back, that product goes back into the circle, and then, you know, eventually comes back as either the same product or a different product, right? The same thing with water scarcity or other resources, right? You know, how do we, you know, make sure that the water that's being consumed today and the water that's being, you know, that's being run through our system is collected, is, you know, reintroduced into the system, either, you know, through the same kind of cleaning and distillation technology, or, you know, has an alternate use for it. You know, wastewater might have a use in irrigation or other things, you know. So it's re-entering that product into that circle. That's the key thing that we as, you know, Indians have to identify today.
Thank you, Anand, for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation, and also for sharing your deep insights and perspectives. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.